All right, thank you all for coming. My name is Greg Davidson. I am moderating this session. We'll be starting off the first one with Jim Pinker, where nutrition scientists and the Bible agree on what constitutes a healthy diet.
Well, thanks for having me. I had a 30-minute talk and just found out it's 20 minutes. So I shrank it down as fast as I could. So hopefully we'll get it in that time. So the first problem here is, where do nutrition scientists in the Bible agree? My question is, where do nutrition scientists agree? I mean, and so I had a whole bunch of stuff and I took it all out here. So, but there are a few things that everybody agrees on, and that's these things right here. I mean, some people say high fat diet and all the meat you can eat. And some people say, no, low fat diet and don't eat any meat. And so my point is, but they both show that they work. Atkins works, Ornish works, they both work. So why do they work? They all say, don't eat the standard American diet. That's the one thing they do. That could be the thing that makes them all function. Because 55% of our diet is highly processed. 55%. And so just that one thing could make the difference. But they do say these other things too. Eat less refined foods, eat whole foods. Everybody pushes this and nobody listens, and then eat the right portion. So those things are something we all agree on. So here's what we're going to talk about today. Just five things in the Old Testament. The first diet in Genesis 1:29, don't overeat. The Mosaic food laws, we'll talk about those. And then the Jewish tradition of not having meat and milk in the same meal, and then fasting. And we'll see if those things line up with what nutrition science says. And so this is not a new idea. God said, behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed on the face of the planet and every tree in which there's fruit yielding seed, to you it shall be food. You know what? I think, hopefully I'll convince you of this in just a second, that if we just did that, we would lose 90% of the chronic disease in the country. I mean, and I don't have time to prove that to you, but I'm going to give you as much information as I can in my 20 minutes. The interesting thing is about it, if we put your bathing suit on and lay out there in the sun for 12 hours, what's going to happen? You're going to burn to a crisp. You cannot get the energy from the sun. You just can't do it. Lay out there for 3 days and you're dead. You're burnt up. Now, what happens is the sun hits the leaf, it hits the chlorophyll, and the chlorophyll takes carbon dioxide out of the air, water out of the ground. It hooks them together as a carbohydrate. The energy from the sun is locked into that chemical bond. And that chemical bond right there gives you everything. It gives you the cotton in your clothing. It gives you the wood. Well, this isn't really wood, is it? It gives you wood to build structures, and it gives us that. The wood gives us heat. The wood gets buried for 1,000 years, and it turns into oil, and it gives us gas and oil to heat our houses and run our cars. That's all energy from the sun locked into that carbohydrate over the past 10,000 years. And so then we come along, this is us, and we eat that glucose, and we take that oxygen that we break it down a little bit at a time, energize our bodies, breathe out the carbon dioxide, and so we have an inseparable union with green plants. Without the green plant, we would all be gone. And so that is the source of all the biological energy on the planet, except for a few little spouts in the bottom of the ocean. Now, why is that so important? Here's one cup of spinach. One cup of spinach has 0.5% of the calories you need all day. 0.5% of the calories you need, but look what it's got in it. 181% of vitamin K, 56% of vitamin A. With 0.5% of the calories, you get all this. And so it has folate, vitamin K, lutein, magnesium, has a lot of things. And so if I could get people to do one thing, just one thing, let's say this is it. Eat a cup of greens every day. It's a half of 1% of the calories that you need. You can do it. I'm too full. No, you're not. You know, I throw them into things like smoothies. My grandkids are there. I make them a nice little purple red smoothie, and they go, this is great. And I throw spinach in, and they go, ooh, it's green. And so I put it in a glass they can't see through, and they just drink it. And they don't even know it's there. And they get a cup of spinach. So green leafy vegetables, but all the vegetables. I mean, I could spend the entire day for 10 hours speaking about fruits and vegetables, but garlic has been around for thousands of years. We used to, when you get an infection, you take it there, you put it in there, and it does all kinds of things. It's antimicrobial, anti-carcinogenic, antiviral. It's just amazing. So along with your one cup of spinach, to put some garlic in what you eat. Well, you don't have time. Yes, you do. I can't do it. Yeah, you can. You get a bulb of garlic and you squish it up and put it in anything. You know, you buy Prego off of the shelf, put one clove of garlic in there, and you'll live 100 years longer. Just kidding. So here's just one study. This is growth suppression of a prostate cancer by garlic. So you can see with this is just the intake. This is showing the intake of garlic. And the more garlic you have, the less you see the prostate cancer cell growth. And there's just 100 studies like this. They're all over the place. I have a friend of mine that's a doc in Chicago. And his number one thing is just eat a few cloves of garlic every day. He's such a fanatic about it. He'll make stuff and put 20 cloves in there and blend it up. So I test with my students all the time, and I gave them spaghetti with a cup of spaghetti sauce that is pretty bland. And so we put one clove of garlic in. One bulb is a lot. And they said, oh, this tastes really good. They couldn't figure out what it was. And so I put a 3 in there. Oh, this is garlic. I said, why not 20? So I put 20 cloves of garlic into one cup of sauce, and they ate it and went, hot! Yeah, it's a little hot. So 20 is hard to get. But 3 or 2 or 1 is easy. You put it in anything you make, grind it up, throw it in whatever sauce you're having, and eat it. Okay, here's another green leafy plant, rosemary. Leaves are a spice, and they contain amazing antioxidants. This was done by a friend of mine at the University of Illinois. And they gave these poor little mice a cancer-causing agent, and lo and behold, that cancer-causing agent worked. Can I move this, or is this permanent?
Sorry, yeah, you can.
Can I unplug it?
Sure. Well, no, it needs charging. You can just put it down.
Okay, I just don't want to throw this computer and have it go sailing across the room. And I might just do that. So let's see if that works. And so they all got cancer. And then they gave them 1.2 milligrams of rosemary, and it cut the cancer in half. That's incredible. And then they gave them more, 3.6 grams, and the cancer couldn't even get started because it's an antioxidant. And most cancer starts by oxidation reactions with DNA. So rosemary. Turmeric is probably my favorite food. This nice little yellow-orange compound, it is 28% of curry, and it's got these curcuminoids in them that turn out to be extremely beneficial. So here's a little study on curcumin suppression of breast cancer cells. So you gave the placebo, and 95% of the poor little mooses got cancer. Then they gave them Taxol, which is an anti-cancer drug, and it reduced the amount of cancer. And then they gave them curcumin, and it cut it to 50%. And then they gave the two of them together, and it reduced it to 20%. I am telling you, this is one of the most potent anti-carcinogens you can eat, which is turmeric. And so I use it all the time. I put yellow in everything. Everything I have is yellow. And my fingers turn yellow when I buy it, and cut it up, and then I get yellow everywhere. And so extremely beneficial, curcumin. Now, these are just three things we've talked about. What if people just ate the amount of fruits and vegetables that we're supposed to eat in this country? Just think of what that would do to our bodies. Most people don't eat vegetables. You can go a whole day or a week or a month or a lifetime and not eat a vegetable. Unless you count ketchup and french fries, which the American government does. So when you look at how much we're getting, it mostly comes from ketchup and french fries. This goes on forever. And so this is just a massive study. This is 76. That's a long time ago. What, 45 years? And this is 35,000 ladies consume nuts 5 times a week, reduced cancer. Nurses study a few years later, 86,000 women, 5 or more ounces per week, reduced 35% of CHD. Iowa women study 35,000, 4 times a month, reduced risk by 40%. These are nuts. And then Physicians Health study, finally get to some men, 2002, 21,000 men, worked with them too. 2 or more times per week, reduce cancer risk by 30%. That's quite amazing. So, that's all the time I have for that and more stuff. But think of the things that if people would just eat fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds, like Genesis 1:29 said. All right, the second thing we're going to talk about, and eat the right portion. So I listened to Super Size Me 20 years ago, and I was having lunch with my wife at Subway, and I had this big spinach salad with five vegetables on it, and I ate it, and I said, this is the healthiest thing I can eat. It's fast food. I just finished looking at Super Size Me, and he said, fast food's bad, cut it out. And I thought, you don't need to cut it out, just choose wisely. And so I said to my wife, I'm going to feed you fast food for 30 days. I'm going to film you with every single meal. And we're going to see that you can eat it for 30 days and lose weight. And what did she say? She said, that's exactly right. She said, I'm so tired of you turning everything we do into an experiment. Can't we be like normal people? I said, no. And she said, get some students. And I said, okay. And so I got a couple of students in my graduate class, Aaron and Ellen, and I fed them fast food for 30 days. Now, you're going to have to be really quiet because I've heard this is as loud as this video can go. And so if we can't hear it, then I just won't play it. But we'll see. Where's my tech guy? Oh, tech guy. Well, so much for my tech guy. Oh, here it is.
We continue our special series this morning with a look at ourselves. To put it quite simply, we are a nation of overeaters. But good news is there's some simple things that all of us can do about it. And early show consumer correspondent Susan Cookman has details.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Hannah. Believe it or not, you can eat fast food, chocolate candy, and cookies, and still shed pounds. You are about to meet a professor who says it all comes down to something very simple. Pizza, burgers, fries. We think they're the enemy in the Battle of the Bulge. But maybe not.
Yeah, you can eat all those things and lose weight.
Nutrition expert Jim Painter says it's not so much what you eat, but how much you eat. He proves it in his documentary, Portion Size Me, where he puts Shuba's students on a 30-day fast food diet.
They both end up losing a couple of pounds, their blood cholesterol levels dropped, their blood lipids stayed normal, their liver enzymes stayed normal, everything was fine if they ate the right portion.
And this was eating fast food every day.
It just lunch and dinner, and they end up losing weight.
But getting the right portion size is getting harder. Painter showed us how portions have ballooned. This is a Caesar salad from 20 years ago versus today. Double the portion, double the calories.
And same with the pasta and the meatballs.
Same with the pasta and meatballs. Now, if you just say, give me the regular serving, it's going to be almost twice as much.
And just look at a regular burger and fries from the 50s compared to now.
But don't you think people want this? They don't want that.
They really do. And so one of the problems is that we have this idea that what's better. And if you look at people's waistlines, they are more.
But is it possible to eat smaller portions and still be satisfied? Painter says yes, and to prove his point, he helped us set up an experiment.
Ice cream.
We invited this group of people to take part in an all-you-can-eat ice cream taste test.
Take as much as you want. If you want to come back for seconds, you can come back for seconds.
We started by splitting them into two separate groups. Group A was given a big scoop, big bowls, and big spoons. Group B was given a scoop, bowls, and spoons about half the size. As a result, Group A took huge portions and piled on the toppings. Once we weighed each bowl, they chowed down. Everyone in this group ate quickly. Most even came back for seconds. But watch what happened when we brought in Group B, the ones with the smaller bowls. They filled their dishes, while the smaller spoons
look at this guy.
More time
does he look familiar?
Quick,
next guy here.
Only one serving.
He can't even eat. He's holding a spoon like this.
They ate enough ice cream?
Yes.
Yes.
Then we revealed the truth of our experiment and the result. Even though both groups told us they were completely satisfied, Group A, the one with the bigger bowls and spoons, ate twice as much as Group B.
Are you surprised that you guys ate double what they ate?
Absolutely. And I can definitely see how just the size of the bowls did it.
Why do you think your group ate less?
This is a good answer.
That's because when you see that your bowl's full and then you eat everything in there, you feel like you have enough and that's all that you need.
Jim Painter said the lesson is simple. Control your weight by controlling your portion size.
What is the appropriate size?
I think you need to make a big calculation. And I tell people, listen, I'm really serious about this. Reach down and grab your side. If there's more there between your thumb and your index finger than you want, think small and choose small.
Okay, I don't know how to stop this. Oh, there, and show us. Oh, all right. So, you know, the scripture says, put a knife to your throat if you're given the gluttony. And we don't talk about gluttony in church because we like it. And so it's the one thing we can do. You can't smoke, you can't drink, can't have sex outside of marriage, can't do anything. But we can eat. We can eat all we want. Yes. Okay. All right. So the third thing is Mosaic food laws. And it says, you know, splits the hoof, chews the cud, and then that's what we can, let me get the screen. And so, you know, the things that don't do both of those, like rabbits and pigs, are forbidden. Is that something that has some validity to it? Well, lo and behold, the things that chew the cud and have a split hoof, they're ruminants. They're different than all the other animals on the planet, and there's not many of them. That's about it right there. There's a handful of them. And so that cow's first stomach holds 26 gallons. That's a lot. You feel kind of bloated just thinking about that. You know, and so all of these animals, a horse has a stomach about the size of a football. So think of the difference, these ruminant animals. So are they different? They're morphologically different. Does that make them physiologically different? So here's a rabbit. Did you know a rabbit eats its own poo? And it stores it here in its stomach to help it digest things. You think that sweet little rabbit? I'm not going to eat a rabbit again. They're poo-eaters. And so those animals that are not ruminants are different. And then here's the poor pig. You know, this is from Dr. Axe. He's a little bit bold on this. You know, we can have diseases spread back and forth between us. Trichinosis. You can have a raw steak. Have you ever had just a raw steak? You sear it, and eat it? Yeah, it's really good. And that's fine. But you can't do that with pork. Why? Because they carry tons of diseases like this that you need to kill by cooking. And so, you know, this is forbidden for a good reason, because they really do harbor lots of things. They've got a digestive system that's really short. It's not really good. And it's not like a cow that is digesting that food for 24 hours. There's just so many stories about this. This is just one. This is the most unusual. There's 24 patients, all of whom were exposed to aerosolized mucosal brain tissue in a factory where they're butchering pigs. And so it had to be something in there. Then they developed this polyradiculoneuropathy. And so then this is one of the reasons why pigs just carry this stuff. And so you got to cook it really well. If you just cook it, is it good? Yeah. But you just really have to cook it. And then so in general, then outbreaks of pork, it says here that there are in the United States 525,000 infections and 12 or 82 deaths attributed to pork. You don't see that with other foods that we consume. And just to show that why you don't eat things with paws in general, this is bear meat, which is great. But in this case, discusses trichinosis in 1998, Montgomery County, Ohio, investigated an outbreak was associated with bear meat from a hunt in Ontario. The person came back, had eaten two bear burgers and rare, and then they got sick. And then the same meat from that hunt was taken to church. The only thing to church. You know, if there's a carrion, he says, eat all this stuff, just don't eat it. And unless it's really well cooked, 15 of those people ate it and half of them got sick. It gave another 12 away to other people and 7 of those got sick. So carnivores just tend to carry diseases more than this sweet little herbivore. And then there's an apex consumer, so it eats that and that eats this and this eats all kinds of other fish. And the toxins that are there build up. This toxin we're talking about here is vitamin A. It's not toxic to him, but it's toxic to me if I eat his liver, because there's so much vitamin A in there. So it's a benefit to them. But toxins build up in carnivores over time. Now, it's really seen here in fish. Eat those with fins and scales. Is that still true? Completely. You know, that's a great thing to think about, because the things that don't are bottom feeders, catfish, shellfish, or large predatory fish. So here's why not. What this shows, this is, you can see this, if you go online and Google Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2010, this is Appendix 11. And what it shows is little salmon, they don't get very big. They live for a few years. You kill them and eat them. And they have lots of omega-3 fatty acids and almost no mercury. Never, because they don't live long enough to build it up. Besides that, they're eating plant tissue. Here's sardines. I mean, who likes sardines? Anybody? Well, see, God bless you. I cannot eat something with a head and eyeballs looking at me, and then I eat it. But some people love it, and it's good. So go ahead and eat it. And they don't have any either. And then here's trout, not much. You get down here to the ones without scales, swordfish, and shark, and it's 150. So the guideline says don't eat fish more than 3 times a week. Depends on the fish. If you're eating salmon, eat it every day. If you're eating shark, take it easy. And then birds, it doesn't mention any clean birds in the Bible. They're all birds of prey. And again, who wants to eat a vulture, you know, or an eagle? You get in trouble anyway. Eat an elk, you get thrown in jail for eating an eagle. Or touching an eagle egg, so don't do it. Number 4 of my 5 things then, Jewish food law. You shall not, this is all it says. It's one sentence. This is religion gone crazy. And it's, don't boil a kid in its mother's milk. Now, what's that? It's just not couth. You know, you don't want to have the milk that's going to nourish that baby and go, we're going to boil you in that milk. I think that's it. It doesn't say anything about eating. It doesn't say you can't eat it. And this one sentence then became, you can't eat meat and milk together. Wait, so is that a food law? It's their food law, but it's not a Bible food law. You know, and why? I think you probably could now. This is some kind of thing. God says stuff. Don't do this just to see if we won't do it. Like the apple. You can eat everything, but not that. You know, just as a test. I don't know what this is in there for, but it's certainly not a food law. All right. There's no scriptural or scientific reason for it. This just shows the USDA and how we're eating. This is what we're supposed to eat right here. What's this thing we're eating so much of? Good for us. Oh, no, it's refined grains. That's the problem. And so what aren't we getting enough of? Well, it's these things right here. Only 5% of people are getting this. What's it? Red, orange vegetables. Huh. Peas, lentils. Starchy vegetables, olive, dark green leafy vegetables. Huh. So what we need to do is quit eating all that stuff that is highly processed and eat fruits and vegetables. All right, we'll end with this, fasting. Jesus never told us to fast. He just said, when you fast. You know, and he's assumed you would because everybody's fasting at the time. And then he said, don't look gloomy. He gives us things on what to do. And then he said, days will come when the bridegroom's taken away. When he said, how come yours don't fast? Your people don't fast. Well, when I'm gone, they're going to fast. All right. So he just says, do it. I have one reason for it. And Isaiah 58 talks about all kinds of reasons for fasting. It has one thing. When you do fast, your recovery will speedily spring forth. Yes. Your health comes with that. I just have one point on this before I quit. And that's autophagy. Autophagy. Eating yourself. Eating yourself cleans up all the tissues, and it's wonderful, and this is what it does. You stop eating for 12 hours, and you start making these vacuoles. They start collecting all the junk that's broken in the cell. And then they connect with the lysosome to digest it, and you end up with pure proteins, fats, carbohydrates, nucleic acids, all the stuff you need to build more of you. And you get it all by autophagy. How does that happen? When you don't eat. Does all of these things. It's quite amazing. Do you have a problem? Any problem? Have a problem with your husband or wife? Fast. Actually, that's probably true. I don't know. And so all of these things it does, it's the most amazing thing to help cure almost anything that you have going wrong with you. So here's what we have today. And that is, science supports eating mainly plants. And we just don't do it. And then science supports Levitical food laws. Yeah, not that all, because the reason we don't eat pork is because it's got poor quality. But if you cook it well, the way we make it now, it's probably fine. Science doesn't necessarily support Jewish tradition. And then science supports not eating too much. And then science supports fasting. And so here's all my grad students. Thanks to them for putting this together for me. Thanks.
So Jin didn't share with us that he is 107 years old. I would say you left one thing on the list with the garlic, called antis. You left the
anti-neighbor.
Oh, anti-neighbor. Anti-vampire.
Yes, it does it.
All right, we have time for like one question before we need to go to the next speaker.
Yes.
So, you know, when we go from the Old Testament to the New Testament, there seems to be I don't know what Jesus doesn't seem to be worried about food laws and this was a Jew-Gentile distinction that Would it seem to be more religious oriented than nutrition science?
I think it's definitely more religious than nutrition science.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder if we make nutrition rules or guidelines out of Old Testament food laws, whether we're forgetting that.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I didn't talk about anything spiritual here at all on purpose. And so my two answers to that are, most of what I talk about is not a food law. It was the first diet given. It's just what we're supposed to eat. And then good proverbs about if you want to be good to yourself. And Paul said, everything is lawful, but not all things are beneficial. And so that's why I do this. It has nothing to do with the food laws. I just want to show that there are some reasons for following the food laws that are nutritional, and there's some good benefit to them besides what they got back then for saving their lives and, you know, surviving. Thanks.
Actually, if it's a quick question, we'll have time for
just a little comment. You know, there was a time in our ancient American culture when the cartoons even involved huge things.
Look what it did for Popeye.
Yes.
You know, he was this big and he got that big.
Yeah. All right, let's give a round of applause again.